And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk
about all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to Stages. My name is Ciel. I'm here with the lovely Trish. Hey, Trish.
Hey, Ciel. Great to be here.
It is great to be here. We've got lots of good stuff tonight.
I know. It's jam-packed yet again.
Yes, indeed. We're heading to Bondi, going to see one of my favourite performers. He's got a new show. Brent Thorpe has a new show called Squat and Cough.
Yes, Squat and Cough. I can't imagine what that's about.
Also staying in Bondi for a new work called The Lady and the Tiger.
And we will be speaking to the wonderful Sam Wang, who's the creator and star of Sky Duck, which is a Chinese-Australian comedy at Belvoir Street Theatre at 25A.
Happy days. Always love going to Belvoir. And
me
right
too.
Now, we are going to go to the Oxford Art Factory. Tomorrow night on the 18th, Jess Ribeiro is going to be playing. This is her song, Love is the Score of Nothing. Very appropriate with Wimbledon, etc. going on. That was Jess Ribeiro. She's going to be playing at the Oxford Art Factory tomorrow night. And now we have a lovely chat with a play called The Lady and the Tiger. Well, we're not actually talking to the play. We're talking to the two co-directors, actually, Claudia Osborne and Michaela Westall. They join us on the line right now. Tell us all about this brand new show. It sounds intriguing.
Thank you. Intriguing is a great word for it. We approached this short story that we found called The Lady or the Tiger, which was written in England in 1891. And we just found that the story itself was really fascinating for many reasons. But most of all, we found it really exciting because of the reaction it gained from its audience. The author, Frank Stockton, purposely left it a very open-ended ending, which drove people crazy. So we thought that was a really exciting jumping-off point. And so we've taken that story and we've explored it and deconstructed it to create a sort of 2019 version of The Lady or the Tiger.
And what is the actual premise of the story? What is the? I mean, it says here that you don't know who's behind the door. So is it the lady or the tiger? Is that talking about sort of a split in a woman, that sort of thing?
It reads like an allegory or like a fairy tale in a sense. The story goes that there's a kingdom and a semi-barbaric king whose way of administering justice and punishing alleged criminals is by putting them in this big arena and getting them to choose between one of two doors. And so behind one door is a man-eating tiger. And if the accused chooses that door, then they're automatically guilty and they get eaten on the spot. Behind the second door is a beautiful lady who has been handpicked from the kingdom to be the perfect match for this person. So if this person picks that door, they're married on the spot and, you know, they're presumed innocent. The sort of idea is that this is the best way to administer justice because it's all through chance, irrefutable chance, that this person is determined guilty or innocent.
So I guess my first question is, what are you doing with the tiger? How are you making the tiger come to life?
So I guess from our end, what we were excited by was the kind of open-endedness of the story, which Michaela spoke about, and how that kind of relates to, I guess, 21st century pop culture, the way in which we sort of consume narrative, the idea of, like, it's kind of impossible to have an open ending nowadays, one, because people will try and spoil it, especially with, like, you know, chat rooms on the internet and all of this sort of stuff and the way that different endings and things are leaked of television series. So we kind of wanted to find a way to insert that kind of like hyper real pop culture cartoon almost element into the story. So the costuming is kind of the most sort of like pop culture-y, hyper real aesthetic we could go for. So the tiger is sort of a almost like anime like mascot, and the lady kind of operates somewhere between a Disney princess and a children's birthday party entertainer.
Love it. And you're doing it in the round the back open air, like it's a big spectacular in the open air. Are you taking us to the arena? Are we in the arena?
Yeah, great question. So we were really lucky that Bondi Feast had the perfect space for this show, which is the amphitheatre out the back of Bondi Pavilion. So we've created this show for that space. It's site-specific. It kind of uses the existing infrastructure of that amphitheatre and of the pavilion itself. And so, in a word, yes, we are bringing you to that amphitheatre, but we're also bringing you to many, many more places. The way that our show kind of unfolds, you could call it a kind of like dream-like, nightmare-like mediation on these themes of kind of the brutality of entertainment and how we love watching people suffer. You know, we love watching TV shows like Married at First Sight or, you know, these gruesome TV murder dramas. We're also really interested in the kind of way that we perform, I guess, womanhood and the way that we, different ways of telling stories and how you can really like affect an audience through telling stories in different ways.
Yes, and I know in the old story it's the lady behind the door, which has a slight bit of sexism about it, the beautiful handpicked lady.
Oh, absolutely.
and there's a kind of a bit of a witch thing there, and I also sort of find that there in that story there's an injustice. You know, you can be you know, not guilty and open up on the tiger because of that chance, which is a little bit of Dice Man. But I was wondering, you're putting it now, you know, is it a little bit like call-out culture as well when you were talking about that we like to watch people suffer? What about that sort of call-out culture where people can be named and shamed before they've really had a fair trial sometimes?
I think it's really interesting, especially with the kind of current climate of freedom of speech and the kind of the way that people are sort of persecuted by the public. It is really interesting to think about, like, what is that sort of judicial system? Like, if 100,000 people on Twitter condemn you, where does that sort of leave you even before the hands of the law? And I think the way that we've kind of, the kind of effective of taking this story and through our kind of rehearsal and development process, which really was just a lot of conversations about how it sort of fits into 21st century life, and then kind of the performers, Adrian Daff and Eliza Scott, doing long form improvisations around the kind of themes of the story. It's definitely something that's come up, and these kind of ideas around, like, you know, if the person who's been accused is guilty and then has to marry this, you know,
poor
woman who's just been plucked from society and put behind a door, where does that sort of lead you? So I think it's kind of as sort of fantastical and then ridiculous as the story is, I think it's a really good point that we're kind of at this weird crossroads at the moment where the public kind of do have, and I guess it is sort of chance. I mean, like, you know, if people like you, if you're well perceived by the media, then maybe you're not going to get completely...
Yeah, you get away with it.
On the internet. And in a sense, you'll get away with it. So, I think it's really important.
Well, I'm really excited by this. A 19th century story with amazing 21st century possibilities. It's going to be on in Bondi. It is all happening very soon.
The 16th and to the 20 of July at 8 p.m.
That is very soon. Lord.
Yeah.
At
the venue is the Yard Bondi Feast. Yes.
Thank you. Correct. Thank you so much, Michaela and Claudia, for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having us.
In the House, Cult Film Classics concludes at Event Cinemas George Street on July 22nd with Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Don't miss your favorite cult classics back on the big screen. Hosted by the Movie Nerds. Check the full film list and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street sponsors 2SER 107.3.
And now a review from Catherine for Jack and the Beanstalk, which is playing at the Sydney State Theatre. It's a spectacular giant 3D family musical panto.
This week, we delve into the world of pantomime with Bonnie Lithgow Productions' Jack and the Beanstalk, which has just opened at the State Theatre. Pantomime is a very distinct form of family-orientated musical theatre, wherein a fairy tale or nursery rhyme is presented by an MC and the whole action is broken up with slapstick-style skits, topical and very cheeky humour, and audience participation segments. It is an incredibly unpretentious form of theatre where the audience is free to boo and cheer, laugh out loud, and even dance in the aisles as they see fit as the production unfolds. The crew tonight delivered a wonderful production and ticked all these boxes of this genre to a packed-out theatre mostly attended by families. Interspersed within the tale of Jack, his family and their monetary woes, and his eventual victory over the giant, Blunderdore, were classic gags and an overall crude and cheeky, very British style of humour. Now, some of these jokes were clearly aimed at the adults in the audience and would have gone straight over the heads of the children. The skits borrowed directly from John Cleese's Monty Python and the Flying Circus. The children in the audience would have recognised the well-known actor Jimmy Rees of children's TV show Jimmy Giggle and also Dancing with the Stars, who played the role of Simon Trott and was also one of the key hosts of the show. My favourite character, however, would have to be the villain, Freddie Fleshcreep, played by Luke Joslin, whose every speech began with lyrics from Queen songs. Other notable cast members included Lucy Durack as Fairy Crystal and Dame Trot, who was Jack's mother, played by Malcolm Lord in drag. The backdrop was a simple curtain with stars woven into it, which reflected the gobo lighting effect wonderfully. Now, the 3D section of this show was very novel and impressive, where Jack was inside the giant Blunderdore's castle on a cloud to slay the giant and rescue the princess. The audience were instructed to put on their 3D glasses, and it was as if we were inside the action of the castle. Now, the best bit of the show, which I really did enjoy, was the cow, Daisy, flawlessly played by two people in a cow suit, who had the audience laughing in hysterics. Also worth mentioning is the dancing and choreography, which was very impressive. I really did love this show. Jack and the Beanstalk is playing at the State Theatre in Sydney from July 12th to July 21st.
Thank you, Catherine. It sounds actually a good show for school holidays, despite the fact that the princess does not rescue herself.
That's right.
Which she probably should.
Not a fractured fairy tale, a real fairy tale.
Yes, yes, indeed. Charlie Bliss, they're playing at the Lansdowne on Tuesday the 23rd. This is their song, Capacity.
I used to think that I should be good at everything. Now I know I was wrong. I used to think that I should do right by everyone. Now I know I was wrong. A couple of
Well, Sky Duck is a new Australian-Chinese or Chinese-Australian comedy at Belvoir. We are here with the creator and star, Sam Wang, and also the director, Eileen Huynh. Excuse my terrible pronunciation.
No, that wasn't very good.
Not had enough coffee or wine today. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, I guess I'll start with you, Sam. Tell us, what is Sky Duck all about?
So it's basically a Chinese spoof of 007 with Mr. Bean and Top Gun and Inception and The Matrix. It's basically a parody of set in the 90s of China. China's still America's fighter jet software, but it's completely ridiculous and lots of pop references and, yeah, just a silly kind of ride.
And are they all those kind of movies, the James Bond thing and all of that? Is that stuff that you grew up with watching or?
Yeah.
Mr. Bean?
Mr. Bean, James Bond, yeah, like. There's even Mighty Ducks and Cool Running references.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of physical theatre then, I take it. You'd be flying around and having fight scenes and things like that?
Pretending to fly around in a pretend flight simulator. Yeah.
So politically speaking, just recently the Chinese sailed into the harbour. Are you in fear of getting arrested, putting this show on about Chinese spies, do you think?
I wasn't until I started doing interviews with everyone started mentioning it.
Oh, no.
But now,
I'm so sorry.
But now I'm like, maybe I do need to be.
I just think it could be quite topical. Did you have that intention?
No, to be honest, not really.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like a silly kind of insight into the spy world and how it's like any other job that people are just trying to meet targets and pretend they're doing work and stuff like that.
You're taking the glamour out of spy. And tell me about the influence for the, like, it's a Chinese-Australian comedy. What makes it so sort of particular to a Chinese-Australian sort of experience?
I guess it's so I was born in China. I moved here when I was six. And so growing up, I kind of watched like Chinese stuff, like Jackie Chan and stuff. And I grew up watching Australian stuff and American stuff. So I guess, and now like after uni and stuff, kind of watching like world cinema and kind of watching Chinese sitcoms now. And it's just basically, I guess, a blend of everything that I've kind of like watched and loved.
Yeah.
So I guess in that sense, it's kind of, I think it's quite Australian in that sense that it's, you know, people kind of absorb a lot of different things from a lot of different sources.
Big blender.
Yeah. And now, especially when things are so accessible these days, that hopefully that resonates with, resonates with the uniquely Australian / Chinese kind of experience.
And so it's a kind of homage as well. It's saying a homage to the things that you love and those kind of mixed up things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Eileen, how did you approach directing this piece?
Well, because Sam and I have been longtime friends, and he actually approached me last year, and we had a little run over in Newcastle, which was great. And so when we went down this route this time, look, this was actually one of my first directing gigs. I've directed small things but haven't any done a full-length show before. So I was actually learning about how to approach things, and considering we know each other quite well, it's also another dynamic of, how do I communicate in a certain way, which is different from what we usually communicate.
For sure, because I was going to ask that. Like, I mean, you're working with a writer and, you know, can that be a little bit sort of problematic to sort of go, listen, I think we should maybe do it like this, or let's cut this, or...
Well, I won't lie.
The truth comes out.
And at the same time, because Sam is the writer, I mean, there was discussions where it was tug and pull because it was very collaborative in that sense. So it was interesting in that way. It wasn't just me saying, oh, I think this should be done, and because this is I'm directing, this is the way it should go. It was definitely not that. It was much more collaborative and about having those discussions where we tried to find middle ground, which I think we really did in the end. And
we
definitely had moments where we both debated things, but I think that was really important and actually really satisfying in the end.
And I guess because you had this friendship to begin with as well, maybe that made it kind of easier to...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. Easier to kind of like bear it out and just go, yes, because we... Well, I think our relationship is...
I hope so. We'll see.
A large part of the play is done in Mandarin with subtitles, which is, I believe, the first time it's been done in this larger percentage. And why did you choose to do that? I think it's great and interesting that you did, because we don't see that often on the Australian stage, especially Belvoir Street. Mm.
Yeah, I guess part of what inspired me was like... kind of what I've been kind of introduced to some recent Chinese sitcoms in the last couple of years. And Because I guess my I think one of the expectations I think I feel is like when I'm going to watch something, especially in theatre that's in a foreign language, is that with subtitles that it's quite targeted towards the audience that speaks that foreign language. And it's often quite serious, and it's like the expectation is that through the acting or the performing or whatever, even though you won't understand it or even have time to read the subtitles, you'll still get to feel a bit of what the meaning is. And I kind of don't really trust that. And this was very much about trying to write something that's targeted towards a non Chinese speaking audience, so that they can, and it's comedy and it's silly, and that even if you can't understand the language, you have time to follow the subtitles and you can see how silly the language and what the people say in Chinese can be, as opposed to, I guess, maybe what your expectation of something like this would be when it's in a foreign language.
And so you play, homage to people. Who are your favourite characters that you base these on? You did mention Jackie Chan.
The Australian character is probably inspired by Miss G from.
Oh yes,
Miss G. Yeah. American character, the American secret agent, is inspired by. By Christopher Walken.
Great choice. I love it.
And then the Chinese characters, I would say the two Chinese agents are basically a Timon and Pumbaa kind of duo of Chinese. Yeah, kind of like a comedy duo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That sounds great.
Absolutely. Well, Skydark, a Chinese spy comedy, it's already playing. How's it been going?
You know, it's been going really well. It's been really...
And what sort of audiences are coming? Are you getting a mixed sort of audience?
We are. And, you know, a lot of Chinese people are showing up, which is so great.
Yeah, that is good.
You know, it's exciting that they're interested. And, you know, because a lot of the time we don't see them at the theatre.
That's right.
So
even though they make up such a huge, you know, percentage of the population, and it's great to see something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So in that way, it's really exciting to see that happen. But we've had a range from young to more mature audiences, so it's been great to see a variety come through the door.
Absolutely. Well, it is on till the 20th. It's downstairs at Belvoir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Join Team UTS at the 2019 City to Serve and get exclusive team benefits and perks. You'll wear the Team UTS singlet and have exclusive access to the Bondi Beach marquee at the end of the race. Enjoy free food, drinks and a massage for Team UTS members only. Everyone's welcome. Visit the activateuts.com.au website to register now before it's too late. activateuts.com.au, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
And right now we have the fabulous Brent Thorpe from Squat and Cough, brand new show coming to Bondi. Hello, hello.
Hello, CL. How are you?
And of course, Brent, you're here with Trisha Stars as well.
Hi, Brent. How are you?
Hello, Trisha.
Thank you.
I'm really well. Thank you for having me.
That's all right.
Now, Brent, Squat and Cough, what a great name for a show. Tell us all about it.
I know, with a title like that, it really wrote itself. it did. It came out of, I went to the Mardi Gras party this year, and I hadn't been to a Mardi Gras party in about 20 years. And I was absolutely shocked. This is happening, but I was really shocked to find out as the weekend went on, and by Monday and Tuesday, I found out through friends how many people had been... stopped on the queue going into the party by sniffer dogs and strip searched.
No way.
And one boy was on the line, and a dog sat next to him, and they took him and they strip searched him, and he got back on the line, and he progressed down at maybe 100 or 200 people, and another dog came and sat next to him, and the police had come with us, and he said, but those police over there have already searched me. They said, that doesn't matter, come with us. And he was strip searched twice before he even got into the party.
Oh my God!
So, and then I heard a whole lot of other stories about it, and my partner started writing an official report about it, just out of his own interest for, you know, like just for different politicians that he's going to submit it to and stuff. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. And of course, the terminology around it is squat and cough, and I just thought, this is crazy. I'm going to do a show called Squat and Cough. Because I just can't believe that it's happening. But anyway, so, but it is, like, I know it's an awful situation, but the show's a comedy and it's very hyper-real. And
because I was going to say that, Brent, like it's actually, you know, quite a serious kind of subject matter, and yet it is a comedy. Rest assured, everybody, it is funny.
It's definitely a comedy and it's very, very absurd.
Yes.
It's like everything is like pushed to the absolute limit with it. And what it's, and obviously it focuses on gay events. You know, like that's what I've chosen to look at in it. And it happens through the eyes of a character that I invented called Derek Lovecock, who, of course, I don't know who knew. That's fate, really. And so Derek was young in the 70s, and so he has these stories of what, you know, what going out was like to go to Patches and Capriccio's and all these discos on Oxford Street where it was still against the law to be gay, and yet they went out and they did what they did and they were all of their shenanigans and stuff. And then he sort of finds himself, you know, so many years later in his 50s, going out and the police are everywhere. And he's just sort of like, what has happened to my world? And I suppose he just finds himself, and I suppose like me too, to a certain extent, a bit displaced. You know,
yeah, and so what are you hoping? Are you hoping to achieve that, you know, they'll back off a little bit and there won't be so much, you know, fun police around trying to sniff everyone who might be going out to have a dance sort of thing? Is that the idea?
Look, you know, who knows? I only found out that a friend of mine sent me a text message this morning saying that a story came out in the Herald last week about a woman who had a really horrific experience with being strip searched at an event, and the police were just saying, tell us where the drugs are and we'll let you go. And she was stripped naked in the enclosure, and they prolonged it, and then she said, I'm going to get another officer, and she opened the door of that enclosure and called out to people so that anyone walking past could look in and see her. And that was on Alan Jones this morning, and he has gone ballistic over it. But it's sort of, but with doing this, I suppose, look, I'm not doing it so much to, it's not that I hope to instigate change or anything like that. What I really want to do is just make the general public aware of this happening. And I also do, like, obviously there's a more factual part in it where I do talk about, like, and these are your rights. Like, it's actually against the law. The police cannot tell you to squat and cough. Like, that is against the law. And it's against the law for you to be stripped naked. And because we so often, I think, when it comes to the law and whatever, we do volunteer. You know,
well, we're frightened. We cooperate because we're a bit frightened, yeah.
Exactly. We get scared, and so we say yes to everything, and we actually, we don't have to. Like, we do, the general public do have rights. And yet then, and I suppose that's what I want people to really take away from it. I want them to have a great laugh, and I want them to see the absurdity of this situation, because I think it is absurd. And if they leave knowing that, okay, I don't need to consent to all of this.
Oh, it is going to be absolutely fantastic. I cannot wait. It's only on for two nights.
Oh, no, it should be on more.
I know. It's Bondi Pavilion this Friday and Saturday night. Brent Thorpe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Every 5 minutes, an Australian is diagnosed with cancer. In July alone, that's over 11,000 Aussies. That's the size of a footy stadium. But you can help. Sign up for Dry July and raise funds for people affected by cancer. Giving up the booze for 31 days might seem tough, but it will make a massive difference to the lives of cancer patients. Search Dry July and sign up today.
Special thanks, of course, to our executive producer, Regina Botros. Trisha Stars, it's been lovely spending the evening with you.
Oh, you too, CL. Fantastic.
Get out and see some theatre. There is so much great stuff to see, including this. Jacob Banks, he is playing on Sunday night, Sunday the 21st, at the Oxford Art Factory. This is his song, Chain Smoking. Oh, I miss it. I'm not going to lie.
Can't be good for my sanity, can't be good for my lungs. Chain smoking, I know.